Because he wouldn't want to cheat me out of thanking him for something I didn't get. You tell him. You know what I've been learning? It takes less than 15 seconds with anybody to get them to smile. And guess what? If you'll do that with most people, friend, you'll be about the greatest thing that ever happened in most people's lives, because most people never have anybody in their lives that'll make them smile. And if you don't believe that, you start getting plugged into learning what life is all about, and you'll find out about it in a hurry. But I even go a step further than not giving them a smile, you know, because some of them think it don't mean them. So now, you know, I give them a big hug, you know. You know, a lot of people question this, my business of hugging people, you know. And I know some of you how you react. But you know how I started this? I started at my church. I'd go into the church and another world. You know that saying, many are cold and few are frozen? I used to go in everywhere. I say, why don't you tell people you're an atheist and help us in reverse? There was no use me giving a lecture because that's the best way to turn a guy off is tell him how he ought to change. So what I did, I'd go into church Sunday morning and I'd grab him and I'd give him a big hug. I'd, ooh, what's going on here? But it knocked off some of that aloofness, and I just related to him and kind of, you know, just give him a semi-adjustment. But the word got out. Now, seriously, you're always going to get criticized. You're always going to get criticized. So pretty soon, you know, people are talking about, this gets back to me, you know, what's this Jones hugging men bit? So I immediately thought, well, I better cut this out. I better not do it. But I couldn't cut it out. You know why? Because the men had gotten used to their hugs. Now listen. Listen. The word is out. Listen. And my wife will tell you she gets mad every Sunday when I'm home. My wife gets mad at me because it takes me an extra half hour. There they are, one by one, lined up to get the hug. The word is out that the men get more loving from me on Sunday morning at church than they get at a home all week from their wives. So, some of you wives, take note. Okay. One, you better be learning. Working! You know that I know today I'm not much of an encourager. You know how I know I'm not much of an encourager? Because one day I decided to start working at being one. You know the guy who thinks he's pretty good at something? He's a guy who's never made a decision to start working on being it. That's why the average person will say, well, I'm pretty good at that. Or the guy says, I kind of like the way I am. God bless your miserable pinhead. Now listen, boy. I'm telling you something that I know you know. And that is the day you make up your mind and make a decision to start working and learning something, when you're the best, you're going to...
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts on Commercial Drive and in other areas at
Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, People's Co-op Bookstore, Audiopile Records, Bad Bird Media, BAM Merch Canada, and the Vancouver Music Gallery.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure, that's what friends are for.
This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
CITR presents DJing 101.9. We offer people a way to learn about the fun of mixing, sharing music, and throwing events. Our workshops and studio access is free for students and members. No experience or turntables are necessary. Workshops from 4 to 8 p.m. are on Tuesdays in 212A in the Student Union Building at UBC. For more information, visit us at citr.ca or follow at CITRDJ on Twitter.
I'm going to be around my vegetables. I'm going to chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Sprouts. It's your 75-cent coffee fix in the sub. It's your source for reasonably priced, creatively named stew and vegan brownies.
It's your purveyor of bicycle-delivered local produce.
It's also a place where volunteers can realize their vision of responsible business and where like-minded students can explore UBC's food systems.
Hark! Sprouts is currently accepting applications for next year's executive board and is encouraging ambitious, creative, and disciplined students from all faculties and year levels to apply.
Come by Sprouts in the sub-basement to learn more about our projects and how to get involved.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right off. I'm red as a bee, 'cause I'm so
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Today is Friday, the 14th of February. I'm Karina.
And I'm Talita. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia, to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It's 5:06, and time for a full hour of independent campus, local, and international news.
All this plus your weekend forecast, which is... Tonight, there will be mainly cloudy with 60% chance of showers overnight, windy early this evening, and a low of plus 4. Saturday will be mainly cloudy, rain beginning in the afternoon, and wind coming in from the east at 30 kilometers per hour in the afternoon, then southeast 50 to 70 with a high of 8. And Sunday, there will be rain with a low of plus 5 and a high of 7.
Today's top stories and segments are a feature interview with UBC School of Social Work student Chad Walters, who recently organized a flash mob at UBC in support of LGBT Russians, as well as an upcoming stand-in demonstration on the 22nd in support of LGBT Russians. Chad, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Chad, so thanks for coming in.
No problem.
So let's start by talking about... Oh, sorry, I think you're on now, Chad. Try that.
Hi there.
Perfect. All right, so let's start by talking about the acronym you're using, LGBT. Is there a particular reason that you've chosen this acronym versus, say, LGBTQ?
Yes, actually, you're not the first person to ask this question to me. I was going to use LGBTQ, but consciously chose to drop the Q to match the common trends that I noticed in social media and the world media at large, particularly around Russia. The full acronym, as I understand it, is LGBTTQQ2, or lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, transsexual, queer, questioning, and two-spirited.
Okay.
Sometimes I see an A added onto the end, which represents allies. Much of this large acronym is unknown to many, and although it is important to acknowledge the identifications, at this time I didn't want to make it more complex.
Yep.
In our stand for Russia, we're facing an international eye that may or may not even have conceptions for these words.
Yep.
Yesterday, I was actually surprised by how many people on campus asked me what LGBT meant, and that
really?
Is here in Canada, yes. And plus, in a practicality sense, LGBT fits better on a sign.
So for our listeners, and you know, for general interest, can you provide some background on your past experiences working towards greater equality for the LGBT community?
Yeah, of course. So personally, in my mid-teens, I went through the challenging motions of self-identifying as a gay man. I faced the hardships involved in coming out, so my heart goes out to everyone who is trying to come to their own understanding of themselves, particularly as it relates to orientation. From an academic standpoint, I'm working towards a degree in social work, as was mentioned, and I'm interested in equality and anti-oppressive practices, particularly interested in the experience of LGBTQ refugees coming to live in Canada.
Okay.
A while back, I used to volunteer at Community, which is Vancouver's queer resource center in the West End.
Mm-hmm.
This entailed various interactions with and for the LGBTQ community. I happened to be in one of their TV commercials a couple years ago as well, which was kind of exciting. Taking advantage of social media is key to raising awareness, and I have done so in a number of ways. A while back, I launched a YouTube video called I Was Bullied, But Now I'm Stronger, in which I tell my story with flashcards and I call out to people and ask them to reach out to me if they feel they need support. A few years back, I wrote an opinion piece about the gay blood ban within Canadian Blood Services.
Okay.
I wrote regarding the policy that men who have sex with men were permanently deferred from blood donations if it was for transfusion.
Mm-hmm.
The province newspaper ended up putting my piece in print, and before I knew it, I was invited to Ottawa by Canadian Blood Services to be part of a focus group to work towards shifting the permanent deferral to something less oppressive and less discriminating.
Has there been any change in that so far?
Yeah, recently the deferral was changed from permanency to a 5-year deferral, meaning that a man who has sex with a man can donate blood for transfusion, but only after 5 years of abstinence. And I certainly have my own opinions about that policy change, but I can't deny the progress.
Okay. So in your more recent work, you know, like yesterday you had organized a flash mob. How successful was it? And can you measure the success of that kind of demonstration?
Yeah, I definitely can. I can tell you a little story about that. And, of course, flash mob is a word that's being used a little bit loosely here. It's more of like, a flash photo than anything. So I did intend to bring some LGBT Russian support signs to campus and hold them at the fountain to raise awareness. It just so happened to fall on Pride UBC's out week. And
yeah.
To be honest, I didn't even know that there was a BC or your Pride UBC or an out week.
Okay, I was going to ask about that, whether you'd plan that specifically.
Yeah, no, it just so happened to align in that way. How was it successful was your question?
Yes.
Well, recently I was exposed via Twitter to a teen living in Russia. His Twitter account is @RU_LGBT_Russia_teen. So he's an LGBT teen that's facing oppression present in his country, and he tweets almost daily about his hardships he faces. He's calling out for global support. His Twitter page has a big SOS on it. So yesterday I tweeted to him some of the pictures from yesterday's stand and flash photo.
Yeah.
These pictures have been retweeted and liked and commented by people all over the world today. My intent is to show support, and I feel that support was shown yesterday.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And I feel like he felt it. So in my opinion, yeah, it was a success.
Okay, excellent. So as you have mentioned, this week is Out Week at UBC, and it culminates tonight with the Totally Queer Valentine's Dance, starting at 7 in the sub ballroom, if anyone is interested. Can you tell us a little bit about what Out Week was all about?
Yeah, for sure. Out Week is new to me, but I did take a look into it. So in my review, it looks like it's really rich in information. There's a lot of workshops, lectures, chats, films, and a whole bunch more. So what Out Week is about, like many of the gay pride weeks around the world, is honoring and celebrating the diversity in sexual and gender identity. In my initial assessment of Out Week on campus, though, workshops are in place to invite dialoguing between peers and informing and educating each other on LGBTQ topics. It's like a traditional gay pride week with an important academic twist. Of course, with the fun dance to bring it to a close, like you mentioned.
Okay. And Out Week events were held all across campus, and they spread across several of the faculties, including there's one event that was held in Buchanan and one that was held in Abdulada in the Science Center. So do you think that this was done on purpose to try to bring awareness to all the different faculties as opposed to focusing, you know, primarily on art students or, you know, liberal arts?
Yeah, I cannot particularly speak to the intention of spanning events across faculties since I didn't play a part in the decision-making process. But if I were to build my own ideas, I would say it was to enhance and enrich outreach and to widen the dialogue that happens, like you say. I may not be the best person to speak to about that. But and it may also just be something as simple as where space is available. I don't really know.
Yeah. Now, in your own activism, just to sort of branch off that, do you make an effort to reach out to groups who maybe don't, you know, aren't exposed to these kinds of projects very often?
Right. Yeah. Anyone, everywhere.
Okay. So you're also planning a silent stand-in to support LGBT Russians on February 22nd. I was wondering if you could read your proposal to the listeners?
Yeah, of course. So the Facebook event is called Stand in Solidarity, End LGBT Violence in Russia. And it says, we can stand together in silence, peacefully demonstrating that many of us will not stand to watch these vigilantes abuse our global community, let alone as the Russian government does nothing, as I know it, to intervene. In fact, the recent changes to laws regarding LGBT people further instigates this unacceptable abusive behavior. I propose that we unite with banners and other signs and help raise awareness to passersby. If even one person is unaware of these atrocities and we make them aware, then our job is a success. Will we have an impact? Well, awareness is a powerful thing. Social pressure is a powerful thing, and support is a powerful thing. I propose that we bring some color into the heart of Vancouver. Haul your rainbow flags out, dress brightly, and stand together in solidarity. I propose that we don't just sit here and do nothing. Let's meet together at the Vancouver Art Gallery on the high-traffic Robson Street side, a place of public popularity and plentiful passersby. Let's meet at 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., Saturday, February 22nd, nearing the end of the Olympics in Sochi. There will be a lot of activism in the coming weeks all across the world, and we should do our parts. The spotlight will be on Russia. Let us make that light brighter and focus awareness where awareness is due. Who is with us? So feel free to join us. It should be an interesting afternoon, rain or shine, because let's face it, we can't have a rainbow without rain.
So I think the intention behind this is pretty clear, but can you give me a little bit more detail as to the impetus behind organizing an event such as this?
Yes, absolutely. The purpose to me is almost spiritual in nature. There is a great power when people stand in unity for the greater good of humanity. You know, sure, a stand is not actively rewriting Russian policy, but what it is doing is showing support. And let me tell you that when I was in high school, being spat on, called fag, being hit, support is what I didn't have. I didn't know how to ask for it. I didn't even know how to go about asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
I felt alone, you know, and the purpose is to let the struggling LGBTQs in the world know that we have their backs, you know, even if it's from afar. And I think that now is a good time to stand together for a couple of reasons. One is because there's a momentum within LGBTQ communities, owing to the fact that our human rights are currently in world media. Adding to that momentum through our own forms of demonstration is how we, as citizens, motion towards change. You know, and secondly, why not do this? I feel an incredible urge to do this, to stand together for a common good, so why not follow that urge? Yeah. You know, you never know.
Now, do you intend to keep going with, I mean, obviously you have a long history of of this kind of activism. Do you intend to continue on after the Sochi Games? And do you think that this kind of activism globally will slacken off once Russia is no longer in the spotlight?
I do think that the news stories will shift, the attention will shift, and other stories will begin to take over. But Russia and Putin will be in the forefront of the news for some time, is my guess. And if what is happening to the LGBT community right now continues to happen, and videos and vigilante activities will continue to sweep through the internet, then I don't think that it's going to go away. So I don't imagine that the support would go away either.
Okay.
But, you know, it's hard to say what's going to happen.
Now, just talking about the media, how do you think the media coverage so far of the Sochi Games, with the intense focus on the LGBTQ community, do you think that's had any negative repercussions on that community in Russia?
It is a possibility, you know, and I am kind of concerned about the impact that activists may be having on our community in Russia. I have read articles how the global outcry may actually be doing harm, and that other Russians will further blame or abuse the community there for, quote unquote, ruining the Olympics.
Right.
This frightens me and, of course, makes me question my intent. But on the other side of that, hearing the RU LGBT teen call for help on Twitter and seeing these abuse videos go viral makes me know that standing together for however grand or minute an impact is absolutely the right thing to do. You know, I'll tell you a little story. Yesterday, a Russian man stopped to talk to us as we held our signs at the fountain. The signs read, LGBT Russians, we stand with you. This gentleman, you know, he started to defend his country, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. However, it isn't Russia per se that we are standing against. It is the oppression.
Yeah.
He went on to tell us that he agrees that young kids in Russia should not be exposed to LGBT stuff until they are adults because kids are too impressionable. This concerns me deeply because I'm well aware that the internal struggle of sexual identity happens long before adulthood. This man also compared being gay to choosing a religion and spoke how he agreed that the anti-gay propaganda law, he agreed with that law because Russia as a nation is focused on increasing population growth and that the exposure to LGBT lifestyles may deter that growth.
Oh.
You know, so his sentiments, albeit not shared by all Russians, is precisely why we were standing there yesterday and will stand together again, you know. His oppressive perception strengthened my intent.
Now, how pervasive do you find these sort of views to be in your work?
Oh, I'm not quite sure. Do you mean specifically in our community here or with international communities?
I guess in the community here, like, do you find that you come across people who have these views very often, or is it, you know, sort of, you know, one in a handful?
It's far less here, but in saying that, there's almost a danger in that because it becomes easy to become complacent and to ignore what's happening elsewhere in the world where other people are facing difficulties. So yes, even though it isn't as hard here any longer, it still exists elsewhere, even though I don't see it every day.
Right. Now, I just to move off of this for a second, just when you're talking about planning these kinds of events, what kind of planning goes into that? Like, how do you begin to structure these kind of protests?
Oh, I don't know. This is a trial by error kind of thing. I've never done this before in such a public way. I mean, if it was going to be laid out in a process, first I'm feeling the urge to do it. I have the ideas to get the sign, so I go buy the supplies, and then I start a Facebook event. And then from there, I contacted who I knew in the media, mm-hmm. who gave me more contacts in the media. So it's just kind of going through this natural process. So I'm learning as it's happening.
Now, are you expecting a large media presence at this, at your stand-in?
Who knows? You know, I sent a message to Extra West, to Queer FM, to CBC, to Global, to 24 to Metro to, you know, so who knows what's going to happen or who's going to show up.
Okay. And finally, in your opinion, what is the best way for those who support equal rights for LGBT community members or for anyone? What would you say the best way to get involved would be?
I think the best way to get involved is to start through educating ourselves, you know, start talking about these issues, become an ally, join in events during Pride Weeks. Of course, you don't have to identify as an L or a G or a B or otherwise to participate in the celebration of life and diversity. Also, if you have an idea and feel an urge to make something happen or stand up for something, then just to follow that urge, like you never know where it's going to go. You never know the impact that we can have on one person. You know, if all the effort makes one person on this planet feel less alone, less suicidal, and less vulnerable, then all your efforts are incredibly worthwhile. Of course, Pride UBC is a great place to start to get involved, which I intend to do more so now that I am aware that it exists.
Yep. Actually, I have one last thing. You mentioned, you know, you can be an ally. Can you explain the concept of being an ally a little better for the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. An ally is somebody who can, who basically has the backs of the people who are facing the oppression. A friend, a support, somebody who understands the hardship, somebody who will stand by your side to work through those hardships.
Okay. Well, perfect. Thank you very much, Chad. And good luck with your upcoming stand-in.
Yes.
And we hope to speak to you again soon when other things happen and maybe for follow-up for this event.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
We're going to take a quick PSA break, and we will be back with more news on CITR 101.9 FM.
Studying abroad looks great on your resume and opens doors for exciting career paths. Don't miss the Study and Go Abroad Fair on Wednesday, February 26th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Vancouver Convention Center, East Ballroom. Admission is free. Come early at 2 p.m. to listen to our guest seminar on how to access over $100 million worth of scholarships for your studies. Check the website on studyandgoabroad.com.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. LiveBand.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit LiveMusicVancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. LiveBand.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
Hello, I'm Bob Ross, and I'd like to welcome you. First of all, let me take just a moment to thank you for allowing me back into your homes. If this is your first time with us, let me extend a personal invitation for you to drag out your oil paints and paint along with us each week. Let's go over to the canvas here and let's get started.
Happy Little Clouds, a Bob Ross art show, is accepting submissions until February 14th. The show is at the Fall Tattoo and Art Gallery on February 22nd from 7 p.m. to 2 p.m., featuring mixed medium art from local artists. DJ Timothy and musicians Mark and Bobby will be performing. Doors by donation, with proceeds going to the Positive Women's Network. Dress up and silliness are encouraged.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Talita, and now we have some headlines for today. In campus news, UBC released its Vancouver Point Grey Campus Safety Report this past Tuesday. The interim report features recommendations to address safety concerns following the 6 sexual assaults that took place on campus between April and November of last year. The recommendations include an increase of programming and communication to foster a safer environment. Vice President Students Louise Cowan, who appointed the team, said that, quote, "This is a safe campus by any measure, but a safe campus is one where the community cares and is therefore motivated to act," end quote. Members of the UBC community are invited to provide feedback online until February 25th.
In provincial news, Premier Christy Clark criticized BC Ferries for their targeting of British Columbians in advertisements. When asked about the $500,000 BC Ferries spent on advertising from 2010 to 2011, Clark said, quote, "I'm glad they aren't doing it anymore." She continued, "In British Columbia, all those of us who use the ferries love the service, and if we want to get to the beautiful islands, we know we can do it on BC ferries, she said. They don't need to advertise to us, calling $500,000 a lot of money for a company that should be focusing on keeping their fares low. Clark's comments have since been criticized by many, including the NDP finance critic Mike Farnworth. Quote, that really is a bit rich coming from a premier that spent $16 million of taxpayers' money brazenly, blatantly, without any apology to advertise a phony jobs plan in a run-up to an election, he said, unquote.
Next up on today's program, we have an episode of In Their Shoes with host Morme Zanke, a recent ban in the Mexican state of Sonora on 61 names which have been deemed inappropriate or nonsensical, prompted Morme to ask the students of UBC, if you had the power to ban a name, would you? If yes, what name would you ban and why?
Hello and welcome to the 7th episode of In Their Shoes. My name is Morme Zanke, and I ask people, if you were a prominent figure in the news, what would you do in their shoes? This week in the news, the Mexican state Sonora banned 61 names that they deemed inappropriate for parents to give their children. Some of these names included Facebook, Twitter, Yahoo, Terminator, and fictional characters like James Bond, Rambo, and even Harry Potter. When Christina Ramirez, the director of Civil Registry in Sonora, was asked about why this law was made, she said, "The law is very clear because it prohibits giving children names that are derogatory or that don't have any meaning and that can lead to bullying." So, keeping this background information in mind, I asked students this week, if you had the power or authority to ban a name, would you? And if so, what name would you ban? This ties into various issues like privacy, freedom, human rights, and just the general question, what makes a name inappropriate to give a child? Over the course of these various interviews, I think the students have touched on a lot of these issues, and we are going to start right away with two girls who felt that the parents have the responsibility, not the government.
So if parents obviously don't want their children to be bullied, so there's no incentive for them to name them improper names.
No, I think parents should be able to name their kids whatever they like. It's their choice, and if they think their kids are going to get bullied, then that's their responsibility to deal with later in life. But I think the problem is the kids bullying, not the names of the kids.
So these two girls felt that it was the parents' responsibility to prevent bullying, not the government. Our last speaker especially touched on how later on in life, if the kid did get bullied, it would be the parents' responsibility to deal with that because they named the child and the government shouldn't predetermine what name would cause bullying because she felt that what the problem that arised was children bullying, not the name in itself. Which begs the question, you know, what is in a name, as Juliet in Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet so excitedly asked all those literary years ago. And it's something that has kind of ambiguous as to what gives it meaning. So moving on with the bullying idea, our next speaker kind of turned over that idea of bullying onto the government.
Hi, my name is Cecilia, and I think the Mexico government shouldn't ban the names because I think this is another form of bullying because children have their right to know about the world, and right now the government is trying to forbid them to getting to know more about the world. So it's another form of bullying about information.
So she thought that the idea of banning a name would just be another form of bullying in and of itself. So the fact that the Mexican government of Sonora bans certain names for parents is ironic, in her opinion, because they are the ones bullying the parents into using more appropriate names that they deem right. Many other students had the same opinion that a children's name is just the parents' right.
Okay, I think giving their children's name is their right, and there's no reason or there's no right to ban any name that their children willing to give their child.
Hi, I'm Janet, and if I were given the, authority, I guess, to ban whatever name, I guess I wouldn't really just
I feel like it's kind of like the parents' choice, and ultimately they're going to think for their children and they decide on how their children's going to live. But I think in terms of like profanity, like curse words, those should not be children's names. And I think that's about it. Like, otherwise there should be no authority governing what like a parent might name their child.
Our last speaker mentioned profanity and how curse words would not be appropriate for a child's name. So, kind of moving on with that idea, I did get a few students who felt that there were specific names that were not appropriate for children, and they explained why this was so.
I would ban the name Satan because I don't want devil practices or devil worship to be glorified in a name, and that's sort of something that you don't really want to carry around for your whole life.
I would ban hashtag or anything with hashtag because it was the pound sign for a really long time and it just bugs me. Like when people say hashtag out loud, it's just the worst. It annoys me a lot, and it's like, that's not a name. Like that's, I don't know. I mean, okay, if you're gonna, I don't know, it just feels like you don't want to saddle a person with that. Like you want them to have a name and like you don't want them to get beat up on the playground. Like right. I wouldn't put my kid through that. I'll give them a nice, normal name. And also, teachers would have the worst time trying to say their names, so.
So, Satan and hashtag were the names that I got from students saying that it would not be appropriate for parents to name them this. I think the two girls who talked to me had some pretty good reasoning behind their thoughts. There are definitely specific negative connotations associated with these words. It just begs the question, again, what is in a name? Do we have a right to say that we personally feel a name is wrong based on our own beliefs? And, you know, can we change these names after we're born? And I think our next two speakers address the issue of names and how they can be temporary.
I'm Jenny Peng, and I think I won't ban any name because I'm not sure if my kid will change the definition of the name or he will be defined by the name.
Yeah, I'm Russell. I believe that names should not be banned because it's a freedom of choice and everyone has the right to choose their name and choose to change it. So just try not to get offended by them.
I really like this idea that a name is what the kid does with it. What the first speaker said here, that a kid can either change the definition or be defined by it. And I thought that was really insightful. This girl that I interviewed was just sort of walking by. I asked her if she had an opinion, and she just came up with this right away, that a kid can change the definition or be defined by it. That's really insightful. Does a name really define you? It's up to the person given the name. And the next speaker, Russell, said that names should not be banned, and they have a right to choose or change it. So does the government, do parents really decide the name of a child, or is it the child themselves who decide the name? Our next and last speaker provided a very interesting response, tying in issues of morality and personal experience.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to ban a name because I feel like people should have the power to choose how they represent themselves or how they represent their children. Because my values, if I feel like, if I have a child and I want to name the child what I want to name, it's based on my experience, how I've interpreted what I've been through. And so I should have the right to choose what I name my child. So I don't feel like any name should be banned. I feel like it depends on people to decide for themselves based on their own morals, and you can't use one standard or one set of morals to judge everyone because everyone doesn't think the same and everyone hasn't been through the same stuff.
I really liked what this speaker had to say about how one set of morals can't define what a law is or what a set of rules are. This was very insightful, I feel, because most of the speakers in this segment today talked a lot about freedom, how it was the parents' right or the child's right, with a few exceptions of our speakers who felt that certain names should not be used. The bulk of my responses came from people saying that the right did not lie with the government. And this last response kind of summarizes that view that we are all different. We all have our own personal experiences. we go throughout life, gaining these experiences, our morals change that way, and, you know, our association with a specific name is different than another person's association with that name. So her response was a great summary for this segment. I've had a great time this week talking to kids about how they felt about this interesting law that Sonora has established. It was very insightful. I had some really great responses. So with that, thanks for listening and have a great night.
Thank you, Christina Mormay. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for our contributor segments.
From July 8th through 12th, 2014, UBC's Vancouver campus plays host to the Special Olympics Canada 2014 Summer Games. The games are an exhilarating and moving event for athletes with intellectual disabilities and their families. The organizing committee for the 2014 Games is looking for volunteers. To ensure that members of the university community have the chance to participate, UBC has secured a limited number of volunteer spots for students, staff, and faculty. Visit the UBC website for the 2014 Games to learn more. Vancouver2014.ubc.ca.
Winter weather got you down? Let the February issue of Discorder be the light in your life. Bringing you the same exclusive content in our exciting new format, this month's issue is filled with oodles of goodies, such as shots from the DIY Fest Xenopalooza, the Groundhog Day staff sound-off, a calendar of all the best shows this month, and information on all the awesome swag you can win during this year's fun drive.
Are those CITR socks? That's bananas.
Plus band features on Hollow Moon, Connecticut, Redrick Salton, The Written Years, Vague, and Kubla Khan. All this and so much more in Discorder, that magazine from CITR. A copy can be picked up at any Friends of CITR business, or if you've gone paperless, check us out online at discorder.ca. And a very special thanks to our advertisers, the Biltmore Cabaret, Fortune Sound Club, LiveVan.com, MRG Concerts, the Portside Pub, Poster Loop, the Rickshaw Theater, Study and Go Abroad Fairs, and Weird Distro.
Welcome back to News 101. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at CITR.ca, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us. Our next feature is special correspondent Alistair Melling, bringing us a report and facilitating a roundtable discussion on the purpose of university and the emergence of MOOCs, Massive Open Online Courses.
Mm-hmm. I love being introduced as special correspondent. I prefer this correspondent, but that's okay. So I've got a number of things I want to discuss. It's going to be more open table because this is a subject that I've only recently, within the last week, started to take a lot of pay a lot of attention to, and that is, as you introduced kindly, was MOOCs, so massive online open online courses, which are really beginning to take there's a lot of investment going on in these things quite recently. I think I looked up and there's something along the lines of nearly half a billion dollars going into this business every year, since its initiation, which I think was in 2009. So the background to what I actually, why I got interested in this is this unquestioningly, I don't know, you seem to have a process in your life. If you come from a certain background, not higher income, but a decent income and background, you go to school, so primary school, high school, and then you go into university, you get a degree, you might do your master's, and then you go and work, depending on that. And what I really wanted to challenge is, why do we go to university? Why do we spend, I think in your case, do you spend something like 10,000?
I think it's about $7,000 a year, depending on how many courses you're taking.
Oh, it depends on how many courses. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. And seeing as education just seems to be going up and up and up, there's a lot of background to this. But, for example, in the UK, where I'm from, Scotland, it's still free. England has gone from around about $5,000 to $15,000 a year.
Wait, Scotland is free?
Scotland's free, but I don't know how long it's going to last for. It's because it's unfundable. It's all on debt. The government brings in, basically gets a lot of debt to fund these things. So it's unsustainable. We can see this across Europe. I mean, Canada, how many times has your tuition fees gone up?
It's almost every year, I think.
It's almost every year. So it's because the government realizes that they can't actually fund these things anymore. It's impossible to fund these huge, massive, great big universities. And universities are having to take it more into their hands. And so what I really wanted to question is, now that we have such an so many people want to go to university, is it actually necessary to what we want to do in the future? I can understand in certain terms of wanting to be educated in... I can't vouch for engineers, but I know especially in arts, I want to go on to doing media, radio show, and a lot of my learning personally comes outside of university. I've learned a lot more outside of university, just going online and what have you, and discussing with other people. I don't actually, and also of the stuff that I do learn in class, very little is actually retained. I mean, go on, you go on, guys. when you study for an exam, how much do you, when you finish the exam, what's the incentive to remember what you've packed into, 72 hours of prior of learning, 3 days before the exam? How much do you retain beyond that? So what I really wanted to challenge and ask you, go around each of you, why is it that you go to university? What do you think, what advantages you think it can give you? And if you've ever considered, as I have many times, of just dropping it and going and leaving and going to do your own thing. So we'll start with Talita and then we'll move on to some other questions.
I think I'm mainly in university because it is expected of me. I come from a family where everyone goes to university, and I feel a little pressure because I am the only one who's not doing something in the medical field. Mm. I am in arts, so it does seem like a lot of the things I am learning, it feels like, oh, they're less applicable, and it's more, you know, things that are socially learned in social situations. But I don't know, you gotta do it. That's what people tell you to do.
Uh-huh. That's the thing I want to challenge. So go on.
For me personally, university is just a little bit of a time filler. I'm an actor. I'm trying to break into the biz, and I'm just kind of waiting for that time when I can drop out, basically, like as you were saying. I'm enjoying university. I think it's given me so many opportunities. But in terms of what I really want to do, and if not acting, definitely something media-based, I totally agree that outside experiences have contributed way more to that.
Uh-huh. And do you feel there's there could be some alternative to going to university? Everyone going into this massive, great, big place that's on the peninsula of Vancouver. I'm just using this specific example. But to go and learn arts, go and do acting or what have you. Is that required for you to sort of achieve what you want from your acting career or going into media?
I don't think it's required necessarily. There are other types of like vocational schools which probably are more relevant, but I feel like just for any job and how competitive the market is, without that little slip at the top of your resume that says you have a bachelor in insert bachelor degree here, I feel like it's really hard to get anywhere unless you have some really good connections.
That's true.
Well, and I do think that my position is a little bit different than anyone else's here, because I am in school for social work. So what I'm doing, although some of it is not necessarily applicable to the specific field I want to go in, it is very specific to what I want to do with my life after. It's, you know, career preparation. And there are different ways to get this training. You don't necessarily need to be at a university, but there's differences in the degree. And again, it's the prestige that goes with having gone there, and it's the different ways of training. So for me, just the idea of university has always been something that I've really appreciated. It's a period in your life where you're not a child and you're not quite in the real adult world. Mm-hmm. And I think that does provide, even outside of the educational aspect, I think that does provide a lot of beneficial life experiences.
Uh-huh. Because one thing I do understand, I don't think it necessarily should be this way, but I understand why it is, with the case of engineers, medical students, yourself, there is, to get to what you want to be, you have to have a university degree. But there are a lot of people doing many courses that just don't need to go to university to do what you need to do. And the thing I like about university specifically is the social environments that it's given you. Like, I've had, there's no place where I've had more fun than going to university, meeting people of a young age.
Ooh, that sounds a little creepy.
No, young age. I mean, in their youth. No, that sounds a little creepy. I'm only 21, so it doesn't make that. What's the harm at your mother rule? Half the year? I'm joking. I don't think I've ever met anybody that young in university. However, there are a lot of little kids running around Fairview where I live, though. Little Asian kids, probably about 5 years old.
I saw them yesterday.
They're everywhere. But anyway, this is Vancouver after all, especially the UBC. Moving on. I do enjoy the environment that we get within university, and it's one of the most fun environments you can get, but I'm just not sure that we need to pay $10,000 to get access to that. I think there are different...
But do you think that... I understand with the educational aspect that, yeah, you can get it online, but do you think you would still be getting the social environment if you're not... in this kind of, because this is the only environment, I mean, you know, college, vocational, it's the same idea, where you're with a bunch of people who are all more or less interested in expanding their minds. Yeah, and when everyone's around the same age, and I don't know that you're going to find another community like that if you choose not to do university because you don't want to pay for the educational aspect of it.
No, this fits in neatly to the second part, actually. You've introduced it perfectly to the second part of online education. I will do a whole bunch of... I want to do an introduction, but I'll go straight into following up on your point. There was one of the first things... I think one of the first major MOOCs, so that's massive open online courses, again, that came out was... I can't remember. It was about... One of the first major ones was about 2 years ago, and I haven't got the sources here, and I'll try and provide them later. But essentially what happened was this guy put his... He didn't have no idea what he was going to do. He put his entire course online, and it exploded. This entire media... Sorry, this entire the social group grew up around it. People set up Facebook groups for it. There was even a radio show made by students for this specific, for his course. It has nothing to do with him. He started the entire course off. And then there was something along the lines of several thousand students taking his course a year throughout the world. And they started up this entire, what do you want to call it, social group around his course. So, yes, there doesn't appear to be a lot of that going on right now. It's very difficult.
But do you think it's the same as face-to-face? Because for me, again, it's the whole social media aspect. Like, I don't think that Facebook interactions are nearly as valuable as my face-to-face interactions.
No, it's a different kind. And that's also another point that somebody else said. They compared this with radio. Now, radio, before TV came out, radio used to be the main form of entertainment. There was comedy on radio.
You mean it's not still?
I'll get to that. But when television came out, radio had to reinvent itself. And how it reinvented itself was specifically going to music. I mean, you can see CITR is almost entirely music. And we're the only show that does news?
One of the few, I think.
One of the few that has decent content. I'm joking. Not content that I'm interested in. Not to insult my... They're not my employers, but whatever. So, yeah, they started to reinvent themselves. Instead of... they produced music instead of the entertainment, which we then got from TV. So I think just in the same way, online education will not be the same as we've been used to in our normal university education, but I think university education will have to reinvent itself. So there was actually a survey that came out called The Future of Education, and it was done by internship.com and a research group called Millennial Black Branding. And they came out with a list of things saying... 50% of students that they interviewed felt that a physical classroom was actually unnecessary for learning. 53% trusted in the reputability of online colleges. And to follow up with what I was just saying, 39% of educators that they questioned believed that the education of the future will be more online. So they feel it's moving that way already. How do you feel?
Go on. I was going to say, just to interject there, anytime that I've spoken to students at UBC who are taking online courses... very few of them have enjoyed them as much as taking... Karina?
I actually have one right now, Golden Gems Online. It was just kind of like an easy filler thing.
Yeah, what is that about?
Precious gemstones and diamonds. I know.
Talita, why are you looking so happy?
I love rocks.
This is the perfect class for
love
you,
rocks.
Then. But literally, time you would have spent in class, you spend by yourself, not talking to anyone, staring at your computer screen, taking notes. It's not as fun.
These are preliminary things. I wouldn't ever... But the first time you try and launch something, it's almost always a failure. Or it doesn't really work. It's got a lot of work to go. But I just don't feel that the model that we have right now is going to last. How many people go into higher education in Canada? It's something along the lines of 40. You can look it up, but I think it's something like in the lines of in the UK, 40% go into higher education, and that's a jump from I think it was about 1% when my dad went to university.
Really?
Yeah, because you required so much more to go to university, and it was seen as sort of almost a prestigious thing. Now you can go to university. I think somebody even joked. No, they weren't even joking. That you can take Beyonce course. There's a course class on Beyonce.
Rutgers College, I think, or something.
Yeah,
like that. I've heard of it.
Well, you need to go to university. That blows my mind.
You like Beyonce that much?
But yeah, you don't need to. I understand the social aspect, and that's one of the things I really appreciate about university. But I feel there could be different methods of doing it. Hopefully they'll come up with different environments of that.
I mean, I guess what I still think is that
I'm talking really about in the future. I'm not talking about the next
but
year.
even in the far future, if we do switch to almost entirely online courses, like what will that? I just think there's no way to predict what that will do to the social structure of education.
Mm-hmm.
And what that would do to professors, like when I think about that, like so say I create a course and I'm, you know, say I'm like 45, I create this course, and then what do I do? If I've created it online, am I, you know, producing lectures each week, or once I've done one set of lectures, is that my legacy forever and I just live off of that? Because I feel like that may either it will vastly increase the amount of academia that's going on because people have all this free time now,
mm-hmm.
or it's going to stymie it because you don't have there's no do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of social commentators saying that in the future everyone's going to have to be a social commenter, social intellectual, like an intellectual. Everyone's going to have their own opinion on certain things, and it's going to instead of having this sort of slightly monopolized place, because that's the origin of university, it was the place where you went for learning because there wasn't this access, this body of knowledge outside of the universities. The universities had all the books, they were generally religious because that was where the power was, and to get access to information you had to go to these places. That was a very practical reason. Now information is everywhere. It doesn't need to be you don't need to go to these, pay $10,000 a year. Lisa's going to butt in just a second. You don't need to pay $10,000 a year or however much it is in the US, ridiculous amount, to get access to information anymore. Go on.
A thing, though, with that, like, even though we are able to access a lot of information, a big part of university, like Morgan said, is the social aspect.
Mm-hmm.
I could read a philosophy book at home, but like going to a class and getting that commentary, getting other people's opinions, other people's views, and not just of your peers, of your classmates, but also of a professional, of your mm-hmm. professor, I think that's a large aspect of university that's really beneficial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that even if you have live, even if you're doing live feed lecturing, it's still not quite the same thing. There's going to be unless the technology gets so good that you don't need to physically be present, I can't ever see that replacing those face-to-face interactions.
But I don't see, in the future, I don't see education being this one person standing out and giving a lecture to 100 or so other students.
Right, the speak-listen model.
Yeah, I don't see that being the future. I see the future being much more, you can say, egalitarian, so less of the hierarchical structures. As I said, most of my learning, most of the stuff I've actually researched or done any research on, looked at, has been online rather than teachers actually talking to me and lecturing me, because I don't actually take much of that in. We're a little short of time, but would you...
Final points from anyone?
Final points on what do you think the future of education is?
I think it's pretty clear from my commentary on this that I'm not predicting that is ever going to become something that very many people will actually fully support. I can see it being something that may actually happen to save money, but I don't see it being necessarily a positive thing that the wider public will support.
And I will finish with, I don't think the university model is economically viable in the future.